The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program. The information provided is not intended to substitute for professional medical advice. Always seek the advice of your personal physician or other qualified healthcare professional before changing your healthcare treatment, diet, or lifestyle.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, wherever you are in the world, whatever time of day it is, whether you're listening in on the broadcast on KCIW or you are listening in on the podcast, welcome, welcome, welcome to the Ocean Mist Power Hour. I'm your host, Misty Young. I'm pumping the wattage into your cottage. We are coming at you from Brookings Harbor, the gateway of the great Pacific Northwest. This is about as far west as you can get in the continental U.S. It's the home of daffodils in December, flowers all year round, and the nicest people you'll ever meet. I promise you're going to discover that today. Where the mountains and the old growth redwoods meet the sea, Harbor and Brookings is home to me. You know, before we get started today, I'd like to say thank you to our entire KCIW sound engineering and production crew. These folks are amazing. They make this broadcast sound so good, so professional. You know I'm an amateur. And let me set the stage. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a doctor. I just bring you the news. And whenever I'm talking about nutrition, I love nutrition. You know that if you participate on this show at all, you know that I'm a nutrition nerd. Now, I do hold a nutritional therapist certificate from the Health Sciences Academy and a plant-based nutrition certificate from E. Cornell's T. Colin Campbell Center for Nutrition Studies. Want more on that? Go read the China Study written by T. Colin Campbell. An amazing book with all kinds of epidemiological and case studies and information that will help you make better decisions. Remember what we're always talking about here. Your fingers and your fork are the key to the food you put in your face, and it's up to you. Wow. We're starting with a rant today, which is amazing because we usually don't get into the rants until later on. But today I have an amazing guest for you. We're less than 2 minutes in and I'm ready to tell you. I'm going to let this guest introduce himself. His name is William McDougall. He is a doctor extraordinaire. Dr. McDougall, welcome to the program. Please tell our esteemed audience who you are, what is it about you that they're going to find fascinating, and then let's go to town on nutrition.
Wow, Misty. Bringing wattage into the cottage, I think, is an understatement. You are high-powered.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me on. I'm an internist. I am board-certified in internal medicine. I graduated from Michigan State University and did a little stint with the military. And when I was done with that, I entered into private practice. Since that time, I've been in practice for almost 25 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a lot of stuff. And I've had the chance to really look at the medical system.
Mm-hmm.
What is created of and what it tries to do, what mm-hmm. it accomplishes, and where its shortcomings are.
Nice. Great. Keep it up. I want to know all these details.
Well, there's a lot more than we can probably fit in the next half hour or whatever time we have. But medicine does have a strong toolbox, a very big toolbox. We have amazing medicines. We have amazing tools. We have amazing surgical techniques and interventions that save lives and should never be discounted. But along the way of our interventive mindset in medicine, we've lost a lot of common principles that we don't teach in medical school, we don't teach to our patients, and we don't often practice ourselves mm-hmm. as community leaders, as community teachers. So along that topic, one of the things that I want to discuss is a disease.
Mm-hmm.
They call it a disease. It's really an environmental consequence. And what we refer to it as is metabolic syndrome.
Oh, I love that you want to talk about metabolic syndrome. Let's go.
Golly. They give it a bad name. They call it Syndrome X. It's like, who wants to touch that?
Right. Right.
Bad name.
Right.
So, or we, Syndrome X in the sense that we're not sure really what to call it. So we'll give it a letter.
Yes.
The last one of the alphabet.
Right. No,
that's C, sorry. Third to last. Close to it.
Close to it.
Anyway.
It's at the end of the line.
It's at the end of the line.
Syndrome X.
Syndrome X is an environmental disease. Syndrome X, like any toxic exposure,
mm-hmm.
comes from an element in the environment that degrades metabolism. And, you know, you can think of other metabolic diseases or environmental diseases like lead exposure and arsenic exposure and alcohol consumption, cigarette consumption, many other toxic exposures. But what most people don't understand is that food can be the same thing.
Yes. Yes. And when you're talking about an environmental disease, you're talking about the internal environment of the human body. Is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah. So when you say environmental, I think most people think, well, he's talking about metabolic syndrome and it's an environmental disease. I don't think flowers and trees are getting this disease. That's right, people. Bodies get it. It's the environment inside our bodies, the environment under our skin that we can't see, can't feel technically like with our fingertips, but boy, do we feel it with our entire bodies, don't we?
Right. Well, it's our most intimate environment.
Yeah.
It's our environment that on the outside that we breathe in and becomes part of us.
Yes.
So if you're taking an environmental component and it's becoming you, it's the most important environmental component. Water passes through readily. It's a great cleansing agent, keeps our blood pressures up, does all the wonderful things we do, but it changes all the time. Mm-hmm. Air changes by the second.
Mm-hmm.
But our food is in us, is broken down within us, becomes part of us, and is eliminated. And stays with us for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the digestion period, but for days and weeks afterwards, months sometimes. So it is a very intimate environmental component. What I really want to stress with that environmental component is we don't acknowledge that. And when we don't acknowledge it, we don't find the way out of the disease. So I want to kind of look at one element of the metabolic syndrome. This syndrome is defined as an illness that's comprised of blood pressure elevation and diabetes mellitus and body fat excess and typically high fats in the blood called hyperlipidemia.
Mm-hmm.
And this usually, people refer to this commonly as hypercholesterolemia or high cholesterol. So this metabolic syndrome affects a lot of people. In fact, the diabetic component alone is estimated to affect one-third of our population.
A hundred million people walking around with this condition. Many of them don't even know.
Right. A large portion of people don't even know. They haven't been to the doctors. They haven't been diagnosed with it.
Right.
And it's something they're just not aware of until it gets really, really bad. But diabetes is a silly, simple disease.
Yeah.
And the population thinks, well, when you ask the average person, what is diabetes? It's a sugar problem.
Right. That's what they say. It's a sugar problem.
But it's not a sugar problem at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's an insulin problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we refer to diabetes as having two types.
Mm-hmm.
Type 1 is a deficiency in insulin. And type 2 is a lack of function of insulin, not by a genetic malfunction or an unkind act of another deity in the world, but it is what we're doing to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We stop the insulin from working.
Yes.
So diet, what is it made of, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do we eat?
Mm-hmm.
What's our fuel?
Mm-hmm.
Our fuel is made of three components. Glucose.
Yep.
Which we refer to as sugar, but it's not table sugar. Fats, which we're all aware of, as in the fat around the meat bone and steak, and oils, right? Vegetable oils. Mm-hmm. Those are fats, too.
Mm-hmm. That's my downfall, just to let you know.
Oh.
Like, I love avocado oil so much that I make popcorn with it, and put avocado oil and Himalayan sea salt and brown sugar. Oh! I should be shot for that. I know I should be.
Yeah, it's good. I had lunch already.
You already had lunch, yeah.
Yeah.
Because that is a really super amazing thing to eat, but it's so not healthy, and I know that. I know that. And it's like there's two things left in my whole world that I really got to work on nutritionally. One is fats and oils, and the other is sugars.
Well, we're going to make you more aware of that.
Okay,
Misty.
I'm ready.
This is kind of a breakdown of metabolically what's happening with this metabolic syndrome.
Okay, I'm ready.
And I'm going to focus on diabetes because it's a really good reflection of how chaotic things can get. And it's something we can measure outside of blood pressure and cholesterol. We can measure an immediate reflection of our current metabolism.
Mm-hmm.
So if our blood sugars are up, that must mean we're eating a lot of sugar, right? Or we're not doing what we should do with it.
Which would be burning it, right?
Which would be burning, yeah. Right.
But if you're going to eat it, you got to burn it.
You got to burn it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the most amazing thing about sugar, now, I want the audience to understand that when I talk about sugar, I'm not talking about table sugar. This is a sugar that we get from canes and beets, and this is a concentrated sugar that's made of two simple sugars. One of them is fructose and the other is glucose. So the kind of sugar that I'm talking about that the human body relies on is glucose. It's a 6-carbon molecule that we burn. We burn it and we very efficiently make a energy molecule called ATP.
Mm-hmm.
And this ATP, it's an acronym that stands for adenosine triphosphate, drives everything in the human body.
Mm-hmm.
And so without glucose, you have no energy, right? So we have this disease. We measure the glucose levels in the blood and they're elevated. And we now have a culprit, glucose. Well, that's our enemy. It's glucose.
Oh boy, here we
go,
right?
So don't eat potatoes.
Right,
And don't eat bread and don't eat those carbohydrates. Well, let's back up a little bit.
Yes.
And open up our logical minds and think about this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, glucose. It's the number one and only preferred energy source of the human body. Every cell in the human body requires glucose. Without it, we have a backup mechanism. Our creator, evolution, whatever you believe in, created a backup mechanism called beta oxidation. It is where we're allowed to take fatty acids and bring them into our energy burners instead of sugar, glucose, and we can burn fats. But it's backup. It's for times of starvation.
Right.
It's for times of deprivation. It's for times when there just is no food. To keep the ultimately important organ alive, that is the brain.
Yes.
That's what it's for.
Yeah.
So otherwise, we got that as a backup system, and really not intended to use that a whole lot. But we got this molecule, glucose, that's of primary importance for all of our energy. And we're making it the demon. And we're telling people, don't eat carbohydrates. Don't eat potatoes. They're going to make you fat.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make sense that the major fuel of the body would be the enemy.
Agreed.
Right. So what's the enemy? Glucose is not it. What is? Well, let's talk a little bit about back on diabetes. We have to have insulin to bring glucose into the cell. If we have enough insulin and our insulin is working properly, then it brings the glucose that we break down in our intestines and bring into the bloodstream into the cell through the cell wall. And this is done through an insulin receptor.
Mm-hmm.
So the insulin molecule approaches the insulin receptor, attaches to it, opens up the mechanism by which the glucose is transported across the cell membrane into the cell, and the glucose is brought into the cell. Then it's brought into the burner. The burner is known as the mitochondria.
Mm-hmm.
When it's brought into the burner, it's broken down to carbon dioxide and water, and this magic molecule ATP is released, and it drives all the energy of the system. So we're happy with that model, and everything is well, until it's not. Now, we talked about diabetes in the sense of inability to use the glucose or mm-hmm. have glucose in the sense that there's not enough insulin, or in that the sense that insulin might not be working. Type 1 diabetics don't have much insulin, if any at all. They're the type of people that develop pancreatitis or from birth develop a destruction in the pancreas so that they no longer make insulin. And those people require insulin.
Mm-hmm.
All the rest of the diabetics in the world are type 2. And they have enough insulin. Their insulin doesn't work.
Mm.
So we got 100 million people in the United States. Somewhere around 20% of them are type 1 diabetics. And probably less than that, more in the realm of 10 to 20%.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of them are type 2 diabetics. And the type 1 diabetic differentiation is difficult because there's a lot of type 2 diabetics that are on insulin to overcome the malfunctioning insulin that they do have. So anyway, the majority of the population have type 2 diabetes, like you said, either recognized or unrecognized.
Yeah.
They're floating around there with high blood sugar levels, not because they don't have insulin, but because their insulin doesn't work.
That's just a sad thing, that they're floating around with insulin that doesn't work. And unfortunately, to our dear listeners, they created that in their own bodies. In most cases, tell me if I'm wrong on that, but type 2 diabetes is a disease of excess. It's a situation that's created in the body with the wrong environmental cues inside the body, right? We started talking about this discussion being the internal environment or the environment in the body.
Right.
And if metabolic syndrome is categorized partly by, how do you say the mellitus, how do you say
diabetes
that?
Diabetes mellitus.
Mellitus. So
diabetes mellitus, the word comes, it's a Greek word.
Yes.
It's actually Hippocrates who described it. Diabetes means prolific, flowing, and mellitus means sweet.
Oh.
So what they noticed was back in the
I remember. I know what you're going to say. It's gross.
Many, many years ago.
It's awesome and gross.
That when diabetics would urinate,
yeah,
the flies would go crazy.
Yeah.
They'd be swarming around the urine because of the sugar content. And back then, of course, there was no solution for type 1 diabetes. These people just wasted away and died.
Oh,
yes.
Man.
Because there was no insulin to bring the sugar into the
right.
cell. Back to that concept again. Every cell in the body needs glucose. We have to have it.
Right.
When we get sick, you know, say you go to the ER and you're having a bad time, you're dehydrated or you're just whatever happens.
They
go to the ER.
They hook you up to a bag.
They hook you up to a bag. And what's in that bag?
Well, I don't think it's chicken.
It's not chicken. It's not olive oil. It's not coconut oil. It's glucose.
It's glucose.
It's glucose. We must have glucose.
Yep.
So glucose, I think we can safely assume may be given a really grossly inappropriate bad rap.
Mm-hmm.
We have to have it.
Mm-hmm.
So we got this glucose. It's just not doing its going the route it should into the cell like it's supposed to because we had insulin that doesn't work. And what causes insulin not to work? Well, lots of things. And certain drugs like steroids, infections, any kind of inflammatory disorder can cause insulin not to work. And so what causes inflammation? What causes this type of thing in the body? Well, there's certain foods that cause it. And one of the most important foods that cause it, I think you mentioned, is dietary fats. So when we look at these three components of food calories, I think I mentioned 2 of them, glucose, the other one, dietary fats, and the third, protein. Those are the things we can burn. Everything else is a vitamin or a mineral or a cofactor or something else that supports the structural growth of the human body or the metabolic conversion of fuel to energy.
Mm-hmm. And those three fuels, just to recap, mm-hmm. are glucose, fats or oils, and protein.
That's right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. Right. So glucose, we talked about, I think, as being so important, we can't do without it. It's really not the enemy. And protein, well, we know we have to have some protein. And people get a little
over-exuberant
about protein and how much they need. In fact, large amounts of protein are very damaging to the human body. But if we back up to one food item that can cause inflammation, and always causes inflammation, it's dietary fats and oils in abundance. And when I say abundance, I mean anything outside the native food.
So avocado oil on popcorn is a really bad idea. It's a really bad idea.
It is a bad idea.
It's a bad idea.
Yeah.
I'm blushing. You can't see it on the radio, but it's really true. Like I'm really turning red here.
So when we understand that broccoli itself, you know, people look at broccoli and they go, well, there's no fat in that. And it's 10% fat calories.
In broccoli. Wow.
Of the calories in broccoli, which is fairly sparse food, right, calorie-wise.
Right.
10% of those calories are fat.
Wow.
cauliflower 11%, carrots 2%, rice and beans 6% and 7%, avocados in the realm of about 35% to 50%, depending on the avocado, and nuts about 80% to 90%.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Olives are 90%.
Oh.
Yeah, 90% oil. So these are really, really high fat plant foods, and they're high density foods that can be excess in fat. If that's all you ate was olive, nuts, and avocados, you could have an excessively fatty diet. Again, those are the part of the food, and we don't quite get the corruption in the food that we do when we take the oil out of the plant after processing in ways that you probably would not consider natural. Putting it in the bottle and then pouring it back on our food, we really, really changed the metabolic profile of that.
Totally food. Denatured it.
Completely changed the balance of what nature intended to have, mm-hmm. as far as the ratio of glucose to fats to protein. And the ratio of the fats within the food that's already there. There's the whole concept of omega-6 versus omega-3 fatty acids and the benefit and the detraction of those components of the fat.
Mm-hmm.
But let me go back to this whole thing about insulin not working. So if dietary fats can cause insulin to not work, how do they do that? Well, they actually gum up the interaction between the insulin receptor and the insulin molecule. They interfere in it immediately. So if you take somebody and feed them, say, a bowl of oatmeal, and measure their blood sugars afterwards, and say they're diabetic, they'll notice a rise in the blood sugar because of the oatmeal afterwards. If you recreate the same environment with the same person, the same meal the next day, with the same amount of calories, but replace a few with butter on that oatmeal, you'll change the metabolic or the sugar profile of that person, not only for the next 24 hours, but for an even longer period of time than that. Because the oil immediately stops insulin from working. Now,
immediately. Wow.
So later on down the pike, you've had to get rid of that oil, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your body doesn't want to burn oil. Remember, it burns sugar first, folks. Mm-hmm. That's what you want to burn.
Got it.
It doesn't want to burn that oil. It's not your primary energy source. It doesn't want to fuel the body with oils. It will over time, slowly. And if your metabolism is really efficient, like with kids or super athletes, they can burn them a lot faster. But as we get older and as we get more sedentary, our burning machinery is a lot less. But we can still burn glucose. We still prefer glucose, and that's where it's at. So we eat this oil, and immediately we impair our insulin from working. And then later on down the line, as we've stored that oil in fatty tissue, we can quantitatively measure how much inflammation a pound of fat creates in the human body.
No way.
Yes.
Like actually quantitatively measure.
Right.
Oh my gosh.
Right. We can measure sensitive inflammatory markers. We can measure volumetric estimates of the body fat. And the larger amount of body fat a person has, the greater their inflammatory markers will be, mm-hmm. across the board.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have a tissue in the body that's composed of a component, lipid, fat, cholesterol, triglycerides, free fatty acids, all these things, actually the form of stored in the form of triglycerides, which are fats. But anyway, fat tissue is inflammatory. So this chunk of tissue in the human body is creating this inflammatory condition in the body that's impairing insulin from working. Not just because of the fat, but with every single dollop of oil, butter, sour cream, cheese, lard,
ranch dressing, ice cream.
You put on.
Right,
name
it, yeah.
Okay. So is there any wonder that 30% of our population is diabetic? That 35 to 40% of our population is obese? That we have the highest incidence of heart disease, stroke, hypertension, high cholesterol, which is not a disease, it's a number.
Mm-hmm.
Heart disease and stroke are the diseases, right? Why do we have the highest till recently? As other nations adopt our habits, as mm-hmm. other nations adopt our food sources and our cultural practices, they're getting the same diseases that mm-hmm. we are at the mm-hmm. same rates.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy. It's crazy. You take people out of their native environment, their the natural environment where right. they were, right? Like, take Japanese men for a second. I mean, you've read the right. China study.
Sure.
Take Chinese people or Japanese people or people that have been eating a certain type of diet and bring them to America, and suddenly they're getting American diseases where their whole family never got metabolic syndrome, never got diabetes, never had heart disease or high cholesterol or any of that stuff. Boom. They move to LA and they get sick.
And worse than the people who are Native European ascent to America. You see, there are genetic influences, and people will always bring these up as a defense. Well, genetically, I'm prone to high cholesterol. Genetically, I'm prone to diabetes. Yes, there are predilections genetically. There are certain populations that are more resistant or more accommodating to certain environments than others.
Mm-hmm.
You take a population such as the Pima Indians mm-hmm. or the South African blacks that have lived on a food source that's primarily plant-based and animal-free, and you move them to a dietary environment like the United States, and not only do they get the diseases that we get, but they mm-hmm. get them at rates higher than our population.
That's weird. Why? Why does that? It's accelerated then in these populations?
Well, it's, genetically, these people have survived for many, many, many years on a very non-calorie-rich diet.
Mm-hmm.
They've had a high fiber, high plant, relatively low calorie, high nutrient diet.
Mm-hmm.
Loaded with all sorts of good nutrients, but devoid of all the unnecessary calories. So calorie-wise, they may have accommodated means metabolically to conserve.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. These people genetically are much more able to survive and flourish on a lower calorie intake than other populations. So you take this like the Pimas, you take them and you move them to the United States, or you feed them the American diet, and they get diabetes at a rate well above Americans and on average.
So their bodies are accustomed to lower calories, lower right. nutrient density.
Their genetics have been selected
right.
over hundreds and thousands of years
right.
to be able to withstand an environment of paucity, right? So you bring them to an environment of overabundance, and they suffer from it.
Well, and if you look at what kinds of diseases we're dealing with, in America, we're not dealing with diseases of deficiencies. You know, right. when's the last time as a physician you saw someone suffering from scurvy, right?
I don't think I ever have.
Well, okay, you're right. We don't see that. But what we see is no diseases of deficiencies, but diseases of excess.
Right.
And man, I'm kind of at a loss for words, which is rare for me. because it crushes me. You know, it just crushes me to know that we've been sold a bill of goods. I'm not a conspiracy theorist by any means, but I feel like in some ways we've been sold a bill of goods that we should not eat potatoes. We should not eat any kind of carbs, right? There's been this whole movement for years and years about perhaps eating high protein. Well, I mean, they've been telling us forever. The government has been saying eat, meat and cheese and dairy. I mean, that was part of the whole My Plate thing. And well, I guess right. My Plate is the food pyramid that transitioned into My Plate
right.
and whatever it's transitioned to now. And, if you've just joined us here on KCIW, welcome. Thank you for being part of the Ocean Mist Power Hour. I'm your host, Misty Young, and we're here with Dr. McDougall talking about today metabolic syndrome, which affects hundreds of millions of people worldwide, and perhaps as many as one-third. Am I right to say that? One-third of the people in the U.S., many of whom have no idea. So if someone has no idea that they have metabolic syndrome, what's their first clue? Like that I might have metabolic syndrome. How might they know that? Is it a A1C marker? Are there other tests? Is there C-reactive protein? What is the inflammatory markers that they're looking at, or the sugar markers? What do they have to do to find out if I have metabolic syndrome?
Well, one of your first clues to wondering about your health should be the mirror.
Right, right.
If we see excess,
yes.
we may have some of those diseases associated with that excess.
Yes.
Which is not to say that anybody with excess body weight is going to have these diseases, though the tendency is much greater. So with that in mind, and if you're curious, one of the things you can do is go to your physician and have a simple blood test that measures the morning blood sugar.
It's like a fasting glucose.
You can do a fasting glucose, or even more telling sometimes is a non-fasting glucose. If you want to coordinate with your doctor and have a blood test ordered with having eaten a meal, you know, with some sugar in it, you know, maybe one of your less healthy meals, and you go in and you have your blood sugar checked. With that blood sugar check, you can also ask for a level known as a C-peptide. Now, a C-peptide is a measurement of insulin levels. So we can get an idea, when we do this blood work, how high does the blood sugar go? Is it abnormally high? Mm-hmm. Is it over 140? Mm-hmm. Or is it normal? And when it's over 140, say it's 280, mm-hmm. are we making any insulin? Is the pancreas functioning? Is it creating an insulin level trying to get that blood sugar down mm-hmm. for that moment and not effective, not able to do that? Mm. So you got this pancreas that's normally functioning pretty well in type 2 diabetics. It's constantly working to get the blood sugar down. But since every bit of insulin it puts out is half speed, half efficient, it has to work twice as hard all the time.
Right.
To bring the blood sugars in the normal ranges.
Right.
And sometimes, in spite of working as hard as it does, it still can't bring them down to normal. And that's diabetes.
Wow. And it's reversible.
It is reversible. You just, you know, if you got a thorn in your foot and you want it to stop hurting, take it out.
Exactly. Yes.
And the solution to the problem is, in what we talked about before, it's getting rid of the enemy. So we got to get rid of inflammation if we want insulin to work. And so immediately the minds of our listeners are out there going, I've heard turmeric is good for that. It's an anti-inflammatory. Well, what about other anti-inflammatories? No, that's not the way we want to do it. The way we want to do it is we want to remove the causative agent. Because no matter how much vitamin C and turmeric and berberine and all of these other supplements we take, we're not removing the injury.
Right. It's like you talked about, you know, if I have a thorn in my foot and maybe I put some lidocaine on it, hey, it feels better, but the thorn is still there.
Right.
So if I want to remove the causative agent, what do I have to take out?
Well, let me give you an example of a guy you can refer to. He's a fascinating gentleman. His name is Andrew Taylor. And he has a website called SpudFit. Now, Andrew was a very athletic man, a world-class kayaker. And I think he had a shift in his life paradigm, had a child, got married, stopped kayaking, continued to eat his kayaker's diet, and gained 150 pounds
wow.
he didn't want.
Wow.
So he struggled for many, many years with different diets and really came to a couple of realizations. One was that food was not a survival thing for him. It was an addictive behavior. Mm. It wasn't just to get enough calories to make it through the day. This is something that went beyond the simple pleasure of a meal into something that he was quite obsessive about. So he really took himself away from those temptations and refined his diet to a single entity, and that was potatoes.
He went on a mono diet.
A mono diet.
A mono diet.
Right.
Potatoes. Wow.
But not just any mono
old,
diet.
Not any old spud.
Not any old mono. Not any old spud. Not any old vegetable in the garden.
Yeah.
He picked the spud. Now, the spud represented the perfect example of the direction he wanted to go in. We already stated that glucose was the primary energy power for the body.
Yeah.
Has to have it.
The preferred source.
Preferred source of energy. We also said that dietary fats and oils were inflammatory
mm-hmm.
and they cause metabolic problems. They're the culprit of this metabolic syndrome. So we picked the perfect food, a food that has 1% fat.
Mm.
It's the lowest fat content of all the vegetable type foods. Second thing about it, it was 84% glucose.
Nice.
84% glucose. And what's that up to? 15% protein. So his lowly little potato, the root tuber, had 15% of its calories were protein, large portion glucose, the preferred energy source, and 1% fat. So he decided he was going to live on this for a long period of time. When we say long, to me, that would be a week. To him, it was a year and a half. Yeah, a year and a half. And during that period of time, he lost 127 pounds. He lost his diabetes.
Wow.
He lost his high cholesterol. He lost his hypertension. And the most interesting thing that he likes to talk about is how he lost his depression.
Nice.
So many things changed with this gentleman, picking this exemplary food that represented the perfect fuel, the absence of the enemy, and enough protein to satisfy his needs.
He did it.
He did it. And he set up a blog. He's out of Melbourne, Australia. He set up a blog and told people what he was going to do. He got warnings from doctors and nurses. And I think
don't
even
a few
attorneys, right?
Yeah.
Everybody warning him not to do this because A, the potatoes were going to make him diabetic. B, he was going to be omega-3 fatty acid deficient and B12 deficient. And with all those potatoes, he was just going to get fatter.
Not what happened, is
not
it?
Exactly the opposite.
Was there a specific potato that he went after?
Nah, he ate them all.
He ate them all.
Red, white, purple.
Russets.
All of them.
Yukons.
You got it.
Wow.
Yeah, any potato that crossed his path was history.
Nice. I like this guy. I'm going to have to look him up. I've never heard of Andrew Taylor, Spud Fit.
And he attained perfect health in 1 year's time.
Wow.
From morbid obesity.
Morbid obesity.
To and high risk for cardiovascular disease.
To robust health.
To robust health.
Wow.
Right. Following those concepts, sugar is not your enemy as long as it's glucose. Fats are if they're out of the plant. And we get way more protein than we need. On a plant-based diet, it's impossible to become protein malnourished.
Right.
And we get so caught up in protein. And people say, well, you know, it helps me with my way I feel, and it helps me with this, and it helps me with that, and I got to grow muscle and hair, and if without that, I'm going to go bald and impotent.
I crave, right.
Right?
Right, right.
So I asked them, how bald and impotent is a gorilla?
Exactly. Yeah. They're not.
They're not.
Yeah.
They're big, furry, aggressive,
strong
creatures.
Yeah.
And they're not protein deficient. Neither is a hippopotamus or an elephant
right.
or any other large animal that's made of massive amounts of protein. We can't not find enough protein in plants.
Right.
In the cruciferous department of plants, I mean those vegetables that are cauliflower and broccoli and kale, there's somewhere
cabbage,
between 40 and 55% of the calories are protein.
Nice.
Yes.
That's
we're getting
fabulous.
Lots of protein, okay? There's never been a documented history of case of protein malnourishment in the world where there wasn't calorie malnourishment.
Interesting.
Never been a case.
Never
so
been a case.
Never been a case. We don't have protein malnourishment if we don't have calorie starvation.
Right.
So these kids you see out of South Africa with these large bellies, they're calorie deficient. They're malnourished. So they have to burn through all their sugar that they have stored in their body, their glucose. Once that's gone, then they burn all their fats. And once that's gone, then they burn all their proteins to keep the brain alive.
Mm-hmm.
That's what everything lives for, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even the heart lives for the brain.
Mm-hmm. Everything.
Everything lives for the
brain. It's the central. It's the thing.
It's what matters,
yeah,
right?
Right.
You know, which takes us into the whole gamut of diseases. You know, we talk about diabetes and metabolic syndrome. And I think most people understand that this syndrome is related to heart attacks and stroke. And, you know, the World Health Organization comes out in 2016 and tells us that all meat is potentially cancer-causing in human beings. We are not meat eaters. Smoked meats, they say, are the equivalent of smoking for the colon as far as cancer risk.
Mm-hmm.
So we have all these authorities, we have all this literature, we have all this information out there that's pointing us to one big truth about human beings. Our perfect diet is a plant-based diet.
Mm-hmm.
We're not carnivores.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have fangs, We don't even have good canine teeth. They're just accessory incisors.
Mm-hmm.
We can't run 30 miles an hour. We don't have claws. We're not predators. And we never were meant to drink another mammal's milk beyond the weaning years.
Oh, my gosh,
it's
right.
The most unnatural process that we could do as human beings.
Right. I couldn't agree more.
So we have a diet that's not only increased in calorie content, increased in fat content, increased in protein content, over the last 40 years because of dietary recommendations and guidelines. But we're now consuming animal products, dairy, and oils at a rate never seen before in our society, and our disease rate is going right through the roof and not showing signs of getting better.
Yeah. Right, right.
So, you know, all my diabetics out there that I might be talking to, it's very, very simple. You can run your own home experiments with this, but of course, talk to your doctor, right?
Yes, of course.
Simply by converting your diet over to a potato diet for 3 days. And again, talk to your doctor before you do this.
If we're not talking about French fried potatoes,
oh, absolutely.
Right? Come on now.
We're talking about
potatoes
spuds
steamed.
As they come from the garden,
yeah.
With a little heat added. A
little bit of heat, right.
Right. We can bake them, broil them, whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
But I oftentimes will challenge my patients in my own clinic who have questions about whether this is exactly what I'm talking to be the truth or not. And I'll have them take a challenge at home by changing their diet for 3 days to potatoes.
Going on a spud fest.
That's it.
Yeah.
Now, at the end of the third day, they will notice a decrease in their blood sugar. And they'll have to, if they haven't already, decrease their either oral diabetic medication or their insulin.
3 days.
3 days. This is why I'm telling people, talk to your doctor first.
Talk to your
doctor.
Yep.
Okay?
Yep.
Typically, my brother and I run a program. He runs the program. I get the opportunity to work with him down in Santa Rosa. And we have this clinic that we do exactly that. We bring people in and we house them for 8 days. On the day one, when we bring them in and we're feeding them all the food, and it's not just potatoes.
They get a little broccoli too.
A variety of plant foods.
Nice.
But the buffet that we serve is devoid of oil, added oil. There are none of these rich vegetable materials like the avocados and nuts and olives that we talked about. And it's all basically potatoes, rice, beans, grains, salads, fruits, vegetables of all variety, done with seasonings and flavorings that really make it an enjoyable dining experience. But these folks come in and they begin eating this food. And day one, we'll take them off their oral medications, their oral diabetic medications.
Wow.
Day one. Because by day three, if we don't, their blood sugars will be tanking. They'll be dropping to an uncomfortable level.
Because their medicines help to drop
their medicines
blood levels.
Kept their blood sugars down.
Got it.
These medicines do two things. One of two things. Either they increase insulin secretion in a person who has the ability to make insulin. Or they reduce the resistance that the body has to the insulin. Diabetes has become so complicated in all the different medications out there. All of these medications really address one of two things. Either a lack of insulin production or a lack of insulin function, or both. But they do it in a way that have side effects and potential dangers associated with them. Diabetes is very, very simple. Back to the original statement, either you got enough insulin and it doesn't work, or you don't have enough insulin.
Mm-hmm.
So diabetes management should be broken down into two simple elements. Remove the resistance, give somebody enough insulin if they don't have any. Simple. But we've got 18 different diabetic medications out there that we're giving people, some with potentially dangerous side effects, some with side effects of low blood sugar, that goes without saying that insulin can give you the same thing, but insulin's really easy to counteract. And insulin is something that the body is used to. Many of these other agents that we're creating, the body is not used to. It's creating side effects that we can't predict and won't predict for years ahead.
Stuff's happening right now in the body whole, I mean in public health, general public global health, that we don't know. We're not going to be able to see it. Maybe even long after you and I are gone, we'll see the ramifications of the side effects of these various drugs and treatments that we're doing. I mean, you know, just recently we did a show. We talked about dairy and cancer. And we were talking about the bovine leukemia virus. This, just a sidebar for a second. We're talking about the bovine leukemia virus having been discovered in 1976. And then sort of, it may have been discovered before that, but the idea was, well, does it get into people's bodies? Gee, we couldn't find anything until, you know, usher in a couple decades later. Oh, look, lo and behold, it gets into people's bodies.
When we have the technology to find it now.
Right. We get the technology to find it. So we don't even know what the ramifications will be down the line in the future for all of these medications, when in the same token, you can literally, before you do this, you talk to your doc. You know, you always want to check in with your medical team, right, to make sure. But, you know, maybe you start by eating potatoes. You start by looking at what's the right fuel for my body, the preferred fuel source. This is so instructive for me personally, because I always talk to my audience, and I'm very honest about, you know, I'm a plant-based advocate, not only because of health reasons. I have a penchant for mercy, not misery. So, you know, I also care about animals. But I often tell our listeners that I'm also carrying a few extra pounds around my midsection. Bugs me bad. But I've learned today, and I hope you, our audience, checking in here on KCIW on the Ocean Mist Power Hour, right here in the heart of Brookings Harbor, Oregon, on the southern coast at 100.7 on your FM dial. Hopefully you're learning something too. If you've got those few extra pounds in the middle of your body and you realize, hey, maybe you are already a plant-based eater. Maybe you're like me. Maybe you use avocado oil on popcorn. I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not ever going to do that again. And I know myself well enough to be able to say, I'm not going to do that again, and be able to stick to it. Because I've been talking with people lately and saying, gosh, you know, I got these extra few pounds and I don't know what to do. And then I always go, well, I really kind of do know what to do, but it's hard to do it. But now I just said it publicly, like I know what to do and I have to do it, because I'm fanning myself because I'm hot. And I'm hot not because I'm a woman of a certain age and hot flashes and this and that, but I know darn well that extra body fat is a hormonal disruptor. I know that. I know that when I'm a little bit less overweight than I am right now, and I'm not tremendously overweight, I'm right on that edge. Like in the BMI category, I think I'm like at a 26,
right,
maybe a 26.4, and I think healthy is at 25. So I've got like 15 pounds. If I took those 15 pounds off, guess what I know? The fan goes away and the hot flashes stop.
It does.
I know.
You know,
it kind of makes me mad.
Wanted to bring up in front of for the audience is this, you know, we get into this whole good fat, bad fat, what fat can I eat and get away with eating fat kind of mentality.
Right.
And I just have to tell you here and now, any concept of good fat for you and bad fat for you, for the most part, you should throw out the window.
Is it that fat is fat?
Fat is fat.
Fat is fat.
It's just all fat. It's like ice is water, water is ice, snowballs are water. They're all fat.
Okay, they're all fat. Okay. Fat is not
fat
good
is
for
just
you, period.
Fat. You know, but now there's a caveat to that, though, Misty. There's these components called omega-3 fatty acids.
Okay.
And these are considered the essential of the essential fatty acids in that they're relatively low in our diet. Now, these fatty acids are actually anti-inflammatory. These fatty acids kind of, this is one little component of the oil, whole oil system that we want and need and should have. But we get them just like the cow and every other animal gets them from plants.
Got it.
Okay, they are made from plants. And in the construct of the plant, the ratio of these omega-3 fatty acids, which are good for us, and the omega-6s, which are not so good for us, but in great abundance in our most of our food, especially our oils that we add to our food.
Yes.
These omega-3s are in 6s in the plant are in just the right ratio that they should be. Once we take them out of the plants and we refine them, then again, that whole omega-6 to 3 ratio and the whole metabolic profile goes out the door. So people will come into me very commonly and say, well, Dr. McDougall, I heard that coconut oil is good for you and olive oil is good for you. Well, okay, I understand where people get those concepts because they've done studies looking at what we call the Mediterranean diet and the PREDIMED study, where we show that replacing animal fat with nuts and olives and certain other foods reduces the risk of coronary disease, but it doesn't eliminate it. There's a reduction, mm-hmm. okay? So if we reduce the fat content or we change the fat content a little bit, yes, there's a reduction. But in scientific research, when we look at animals, we look at rats, right? We've got rats. I mean, rats, they'll eat anything.
They're just little machines. You bring it, they'll eat it.
They'll eat it. Okay. Normally, we feed our rats a 10% fat chow, 10 to 11%.
Rat chow.
Rat chow. Mm-hmm. That's what all the rats get. But if we take those rats and we feed them olive oil, just olive oil, oleic acid, we have a model of coronary artery disease.
Wow.
We created with these animals in a very short period of time, just feeding them olive oil.
So nothing else. So the rat chow goes away.
No. We give them the rat chow still.
But we
take some of the calories of the rat. So say they're getting the equivalent of
100 calories a day. Right.
Okay. Well,
right.
Yeah. For a rat. Then we take a portion of the rat chow away and replace it with olive oil.
So they're getting the same amount of calories. Got it.
You got it.
Yep.
So we create coronary artery disease because these oils, they impair microcirculation. They create inflammation. Microcirculation is the business end of circulation where it meets the cell. It's where the rubber meets the road. It's where nutrient exchange happens. It's where oxygen and carbon dioxide exchange happens. It's where the blood-brain barrier is that we refer to of the brain. It's that interface between the capillary, the tiny, tiny vessel that the red blood cell barely squeaks through, and the cell that it feeds.
Wow.
That business end is affected. And when that business end is affected, all of the tissue that it supplies is affected. So in essence, what we get when we disrupt these little blood vessels is we get disease in the tissue. Whether that's coronary artery disease or Alzheimer's disease with multiple mm-hmm. little brain injuries mm-hmm. from the leaky capillaries because mm-hmm. they're injured, or progressive kidney disease. All of these diseases are really or should be really blanketed under one category, environmental toxicity mm-hmm. by our food with a focus on added lipids, fats, oils. That's what it really comes down to.
I'm blown away at what you said, that oils impair microcirculation. And when you said earlier today, we were talking earlier and you were saying that the oils in the body kind of gum up the whole system, the whole process. I never was able to kind of put the whole in the momentness of eating in the momentness. I don't know how to say that any better. I'm not really sure how to say that, but the immediacy, you know, sort of like, oh, you know, I ate some popcorn with avocado oil and then like a few days later I was heavier. I don't weigh myself anymore. I've gotten to the point of like, I'm frustrated with it. I don't do it, but I don't feel good. So I can feel that whole feeling, but I didn't realize that it happens in that very second.
Moment. As soon as it enters the bloodstream.
But see, that blows me away that it's happening in the moment. That's just crazy and awesome. See, it's one of those pieces of information that maybe I didn't have that I'm going to be able to put into use in my life. And I'm thankful for that because I feel like the whole purpose of this particular show, why do I even do this? Because I'm a freak about it, for one thing. And I'm constantly learning. That's my whole goal, is to learn. And I feel like if I can learn something and teach someone at the same time. Well, first of all, we know just from psychology studies and social psychology that if you approach a learning task with the intention to teach someone else, you learn it faster and better and deeper. So I'm learning from you right now, and I'm so thankful. I mean, I'm I'm looking over several pages of notes that I've taken, and I can't wait to dig deeper into this information. Of course, our show is coming to an end today, which just, man, like, can't we just, like, do this once a week, you know?
Oh, hours.
I know, we've got hours, days. Could we have, like, a, you know, a 12-part series? I love the depth of knowledge that you bring, the passion that you bring. Yeah, thank you for coming in and sitting down and talking to our people. You know, there's so much misinformation out there, and I think people are afraid to talk to doctors. And I think people come into the office with an agenda of their own, where they just want someone to fix them.
Right.
And I don't want
And this isn't a pill.
That.
It's not that simple.
No.
It's really, you know, before change can take place, knowledge has to be presented because you have to know what change is necessary.
Right.
Beyond that, desire, willingness.
Yeah.
You never got anything in life you didn't, or you never accomplished anything in life that you didn't really want to accomplish.
Yeah.
So with that desire in mind, dietary patterns are very easy to change. Now, the difficulty with them in changing our habits and what our brains expect from our food gets better over time. But these changes can happen. They can happen very effectively. It's just researching this information, finding more about it, not being afraid to delve into the websites that promote what every one of us really understand in is that we're primarily plant eaters. If you look at our teeth, you look at our digestive systems, you look at everything about us from top to bottom, we're not really carnivores, and we're certainly not infants anymore, and we have no business drinking milk or eating any milk product. So those are really big things. And you think, well, it's just food. No, it's food that affects the health of millions of people.
Mm-hmm. And it's up to each one of us individually to decide what we're putting into our bodies and when and how. And I'm excited to see how I can change my body and hopefully help our listeners here change their bodies. Dr. McDougall, thank you for being here with us today.
Great time. Thanks a lot.
Thank you to our great listeners for joining us here on the Ocean Mist Power Hour. We appreciate you checking in with us right here at the gateway of the Great Pacific Northwest. Again, it's about as far west as you can get in the continental U.S., and we thank all the entire crew here at KCIW for being part of this program and this episode and helping us be professional and reach more folks. Thanks again. We'll see you soon on the Ocean Mist Power Hour.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program. The information provided is not intended to substitute for professional medical advice. Always seek the advice of your personal physician or other qualified healthcare professional before changing your healthcare treatment, diet, or lifestyle.